Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Bright Star cast announced. Basin Theater Works has announced the cast of the musical Bright Star. The musical will be a partnership with Basin Theater Works, Odessa College Theater, Odessa Arts, and the Ector Theater. The cast includes Renee Posick as Alice Murphy, Justin Wilson as Billy Kane, Hiram Flores as Daddy Kane and Dr. Norquist, Rachel Holder as Margot Crawford, Braden Grant as Daryl Amos, Seneca Mick as Lucy Grant, Chelsea Rice as Mama Murphy, Brandon Thomason as Daddy Murphy, David Thomas as Mayor Josiah Dobbs, A. Chris Barton as Jimmy Ray Dobbs, Alejandro Garcia as Max and Ensemble, Aiden Crow as Stanford and Ensemble, Leisha Hernandez as Edna and Ensemble, Victoria Swindle as Florence and Elijah Rivera as Government Clerk. The musical will be directed by Josh Rapp. Performances will take place in April at the Ector Theater. Tickets will be available soon. Dog Rescue RS to host inaugural casino fundraiser. Dog Rescue RS will be hosting its inaugural casino night fundraiser. The fundraiser is scheduled from 7 to 10 p.m. at Ranchland Hills Golf Club in Midland. The event will include craps table, roulette, and poker tables where guests can play while supporting and saving a dog. VIPs can enjoy a table for eight, early access, dinner, drink tickets to the bar, player chips, and more. Jazz music will be played live, and there will also be live and silent auctions. General admission for a single ticket is $99. General admission for a couple starts at $175 per ticket. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to tinyurl.com/2vabtswh. WTS returns with Masterwork Series Concert. Midland. Next week, the West Texas Symphony returns from a small break in the schedule to resume the 2022-23 season with its third concert in the Masterwork Series. The performance will take place at 7:30 p.m. February 4th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The concert will also be the annual spotlight event, which highlights one of the orchestra's top musicians. This year, bassoonist Philip Hill will be featured. Quote, Masterworks is always an exciting concert, end quote, Hill said. Quote, we just came off the highs of Nutcracker and our Christmas concert. Everyone is fresh off the holidays. It doesn't matter what the program is. It's just an electric feeling to get back into the swing of things and play for the community again, end quote. Hill is a principal bassoonist with the West Texas Symphony and a member of the West Texas Winds Ensemble. Accompanied by the orchestra, he will be opening the concert with a performance with Carl Maria von Weber's, quote, Bassoon Concerto in F Major, Op. 75, end quote. This will be Hill's first time playing a concerto with the West Texas Symphony. Quote, this is a standard work for the bassoon, end quote, Hill said. Quote, supposedly, from one of the members of the orchestra who's been here for a while, mentioned that this might be the first time that the symphony has done a bassoon concerto at all. I don't know if that's actually true. I'll find out at rehearsals, end quote. Known as a key figure in the development of German Romantic opera, Weber had a short but significant career in music. Composed in 1811 while he was in Munich, that work is a beloved part of the bassoon repertoire. Weber lived from 1786 to 1826. Hill says the piece is slightly different from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's own bassoon concerto, which was written in 1774, and is often played by bassoon players in auditions to get into other symphonies across the country. Quote, the Mozart bassoon concerto is more standard because that piece was written first, end quote, Hill said. Quote, it's also by a more standard and common composer. The Mozart concerto is often performed for auditions for bassoon seats in the orchestras. Most bassoon students' schooling involves learning the Mozart concerto. Most of us agree it is more challenging to play Mozart. Things have to be very refined and very elegant, end quote. However, that's not to say that Weber is not elegant. Quote, as I'm revisiting the piece after not having played it for 10 years now, the challenge is to make it have different characters in it, end quote, Hill said. Quote, it's more pompous and regal and noble than the Mozart, so I wanted to have that. I don't want it to be entirely like a march or dance. The challenge is to blend the two and give it some elegance and some brightness that a bassoon sound can give it, but also still retain the regal march-like sound to it, end quote. The other piece the orchestra will be playing is Franz Joseph Haydn's, quote, Symphony No. 104 in D major, end quote. Haydn has the distinction of being credited with the creation of two genres, the symphony and the string quartet. Composed in 1795 in London, the piece consists of four movements that vary from slow and serious to brisk, with a simple ending inspired by folk music. Quote, Haydn wrote quite a bit of symphonies, so he gets the nickname, the father of the symphony, end quote, Hill said. Hill earned his master's degree in music performance at the University of Arizona. During his time at UA, he studied with William Dietz and was principal bassoon for the Arizona Symphony Orchestra. Hill was also in the Fred Fox Graduate Wind Quintet and the Saguaro Bassoon Ensembles. He earned his bachelor's degree in music education at East Carolina University, where he studied the bassoon under Christopher Ulfers and was principal bassoon of the ECU Symphony Orchestra. Hill is currently an educator, holding a private teaching studio in the Permian Basin. He is an adjunct faculty member of the University of Texas Permian Basin and has been a resident artist at the University of Idaho, Youth Orchestras of Lubbock, and Midland Montessori School. After a busy December that featured numerous performances by the West Texas Symphony, from its Christmas concert to the Nutcracker, to the Lone Star Brass Ensemble concert, and various other performances, Hill says January has been a nice relaxing month for the orchestra. They've had a few performances for school children around the area. Quote, January is always sort of a refresher, end quote, Hill said. Quote, we start January with our children's concerts, so when we do masterworks at the start of February, it's coupled also with playing stapled music from the orchestral repertoire for children at elementary schools that are bused in from the different schools in the area, end quote. He says it's a great way to start the second half of the season. Quote, they get really excited because they get to skip school for a little bit, and for us, it's low pressure to play standard music. We play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. We played a little bit of William Tell Overture in The Firebird. Most kids have heard music like that before, but they don't know the name of the piece, end quote. The Masterworks series will continue with Rachmaninoff on April 15th. That concert will feature Caroline Hong on piano, as well as the UTPB Orchestra and local students. The Pops and Family series will resume on March 4th with Brad Lely on saxophone. Lely is one of the most notable jazz saxophonists of current times. That concert will be a collaboration of jazz and orchestral music. The season will conclude with another Pops and Family series with, quote, Back to the Future in Concert, end quote, on May 20th. March will also be a busy month with performances with the Midland Festival Ballet, also on the schedule. The West Texas Symphony is celebrating its 60th anniversary. Quote, with this being our sixth decade, we have a good, exciting end for the rest of the season, end quote, Hill said. Quote, we're going to have Brad Lely come in and play some jazz tunes for us. We're collaborating with Midland Ballet again. We're also doing a chamber concert, which is something new to the schedule, and Masterworks 4 is going to include Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. That's a side-by-side performance by the UTPB Orchestra. That's something we've done before but haven't done in a while. It's great to collaborate with them. We're going to end the season with Back to the Future. It's really fun and exciting music that's coming up in the next few months. A lot of them are back-to-back. Normally, April is our busy month because of all the concerts and Easter. But it's looking like March is going to be the busiest month because of the ballet and the chamber concert. It's a lot, but we're excited. Anytime we have a concert come up, I wish we can do another concert the following weekend because our patrons are very loyal and we love performing for them. End quote. For more information about the West Texas Symphony or next week's concert, go to tinyurl.com/4PFN7H8U. Museum of the Southwest opens two exhibitions. Two new exhibitions recently opened up at Museum of the Southwest last week from artists Seymour Fogel and Simon Warrench. The first exhibition is Simon Warrench's Life in Glass. The exhibit is on display until April 2nd. Warrench is an innovator in the field of glass art. A master of Venetian technique, pattern work, and conceptual design, the Dallas native has featured in one-person exhibitions at the National Center for Jewish Art and the Longview Museum of Fine Arts. The Life in Glass exhibition is split up into three different galleries. Quote, the first one is more your gallery exhibition, where we have Simon's latest work from 2022, end quote. Museum of the Southwest curator Matt Ward said, quote, in this gallery, you can see glass as art. Too often we see glass as purely decorative or utilitarian, but here we see glass as sculpture. Simon is an artist who is bringing his art to life in a medium that happens to be glass, end quote. Ward talked about the many different techniques that Warinch uses. Quote, we're seeing him take traditional techniques like the niche and ridicello technique, end quote, Ward said. Quote, he's experimented with them and turned them into fanciful gestural form, end quote. Ridicello refers to the vector design that the artist makes from many strips of cane, which is the glass material. Quote, inside each vector, he makes a bubble that's made through specific heat. It's this progression of traditional technique into a contemporary concept, moving gestural form. In this gallery, that's what we're seeing. It's his latest work and where he's advancing the medium of glass, end quote. The second gallery is where the exhibition goes from an aesthetic focus to contemporary, with a gallery filled with 433 mirrored, quote, skittles, end quote, as Simon calls them. Quote, it's an immersive 360-degree experience, end quote, Ward said. Quote, here we can see movement of the entire installation. There are areas that are more concentrated than others. You'll pick up unique patterns and unique designs. Everyone will take something different from this room. It's an abstract installation, but there's a narrative inherent in it. It's very interpretive, end quote. The third gallery focuses more on the process. Quote, with glass art, there's not a ton that's known about it in general, end quote, Ward said. Quote, this gallery, we see some of the raw materials that go into making the product, end quote. This exhibition is Warinch's largest solo show to date. Quote, what is the most immediately eye-catching is the second room, the Skittle Room, because it's very immersive, end quote, Ward said. Quote, that might be because of the entry point, but it also delves into how he can make this medium and transform glass into so many different, not just shapes and forms, but emotions and feelings. The art on display stands out the most, end quote. The second exhibition is from a key artist in the Texas Modernism movement, Seymour Vogel, titled Synthesis. Vogel lived from 1911 to 1984. He moved to Austin in 1946, where he accepted a position at the University of Texas at Austin. His impact was immediate, as Vogel produced Texas' first abstract murals for the likes of the American National Bank, UT, and the Houston Petroleum Club. Quote, he is Texas' leading modernist, end quote, Ward said. Quote, he was one of the first wholly abstract artists in Texas to achieve acclaim. He painted some of the first abstract murals in the state of Texas. He trained under Diego Rivera. Vogel, when he trained under Rivera, he worked with a social realist style, which is more of a comment on social issues. We see some of those works, end quote. During his lifetime, Vogel exhibited venues such as the Whitney Museum of Modern Art, of American Art, the Corcoran Gallery of Art, and the Dallas Museum of Art. Today, his work is held in the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Amon Carter Museum of American Art, the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, and the National Archives of American Art, among others. However, Vogel is often a forgotten artist in Texas art history. Quote, for me, this exhibition is bringing Vogel as an important figure of Texas art history to the public, end quote, Ward said. Quote, Texas modernism has not been documented as much as other aspects of our history in general. The regionalists have gotten the most attention, but there was a strong modernist movement, and Vogel was the leader of that. He helped shape that. He was highly influential on architecture as well. For me, bringing Vogel and his contribution to the state is the big ticket here. His work is so stylistically varied. We have his work from the 30s to the 70s, end quote. The exhibition is open until April 23rd. For more information about Museum of the Southwest or both exhibitions, go to tinyurl.com/B8C8PARS. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness, for Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Healthy Living. Midland Health. Don't let zip codes define our health and life expectancy. The average lifespan for an American fell once again, now hitting a 25-year low. But we should also worry about the quality of life than merely focus on the length of lifespan, because in the past century, the portion of years humanity spent in moderate to poor health has stayed the same. On average, people spend about 50% of their lives in less than good health, including 12% in poor health. The World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. There is no doubt that circumstances outside of healthcare can either enhance or impair your health. For example, where you live influences how you live, whether you have access to healthy food, places to exercise, or health services when needed. Your zip code also affects your personal and family's economic prosperity based on the availability of jobs, unemployment rates, education, and training opportunities. These social factors shape and define your health and well-being. Here is an example of how zip code matters. Between the Chicago Loop and the west side of the city, which are merely 6 miles apart, there is a difference in life expectancy of 16 years. At a population level, medical care is estimated to account for only 10 to 20% of the modifiable contributors to health outcomes. The other 80 to 90% are called the determinants of health, health-related behaviors, socioeconomic factors, and environmental factors. The power of these societal factors is immense compared to a healthcare system's ability to undo them. And yes, let us remind ourselves that we spend more on healthcare than other developed nations. Annually, an average of $12,914 per person, and about 18.3% of the gross domestic product, GDP. It is frustrating to witness that we spend more than 95% of our healthcare expenditure on direct medical care, while less than 5% goes into preventative population care. The truth is that decades of research on the root causes of poor health and opinions of public health advocacy, experts have not been able to change underinvestment in optimal health and well-being. It is about time we reframe our thinking around health and healthcare, especially for our local community. Let us create a more holistic approach to healthcare by addressing health's physical, mental, social, and spiritual dimensions. Everyone should have an opportunity to have optimal health and not just access to medical care to receive care during sickness. Our community should spend resources on creating safe outdoor places for physical activity, access to healthy, affordable foods, walking school buses, safe walking and bike paths that promote human-powered transportation, healthier work sites to make healthier choices easier, and outdoor green spaces. Growing evidence suggests that being in nature positively affects people's mental health. Studies have shown that green spaces can lower levels of stress and reduce rates of depression and anxiety, reduce cortisol levels, and improve general well-being. Alignment, collaboration, and partnerships across community stakeholders can move the field forward to understand and address the community-level conditions that affect our health so that the zip code no longer defines our health outcomes. Understanding and addressing social determinants of health can create healthier and happier communities if we collectively prioritize it. Omni Legend Scanner arrives in Midland. Midland Health is proud to announce the arrival of the first all-digital Omni Legend PET CT scanner in the United States. This scanner is used to stage and restage a variety of cancers as well as diagnose diseases like Alzheimer's disease. Omni Legend is the most advanced PET/CET available, and now Diagnostic Imaging Associates, DIA, has one of the first few in the entire world. The highest level of care with superior quality of imaging is available here in the Permian Basin. The state-of-the-art architecture of Omni Legend provides crystal-clear images with the earliest possible disease detection. Early detection can catch disease before it spreads in the body, allowing doctors to begin treatment sooner. The Omni Legend has an array of new patient comfort amenities not found on any other system to make the scan as relaxing as possible for patients. This includes ambient lighting, a design to alleviate stress and create comfort. Additionally, Omni Legend will provide patients with significantly shorter scan times for a much more comfortable experience, 50% faster on average compared to other systems. Finally, Omni Legend features the latest technologies to reduce radiation exposure to the patient, keeping them as safe as possible during their scan. Midland Health is excited to debut this latest technology in patient care at DIA, another way we're leading healthcare for Greater Midland. Health planning. Map your way to a healthier life in 2023. The start of the new year is the perfect time to schedule your preventative health screenings. An expert with Baylor College of Medicine gives her recommendations for what appointments should be in your annual plan. Quote, it is important to see your primary care provider at least yearly for a preventive checkup, especially as you get older, end quote, said Dr. Sandra Nguyen, assistant professor of medicine at Baylor. Quote, this is one of the best ways to identify health issues before they worsen, end quote. During these exams, doctors check things like blood pressure and weight, schedule blood tests, ask about your mental health and sexual history, and update medications. These visits are the opportunity for you and your primary care physician to create a plan to reach your health goals and identify changes that need to be made to your lifestyle to keep you healthy. Nguyen encourages patients to establish a relationship with their primary care physician to benefit their health. Quote, by seeing the same doctor regularly, you are developing a long-term relationship in which your doctor gets to better know you, your medical conditions, and your priorities and concerns, end quote, Nguyen said. Quote, this leads to better management of chronic conditions, more preventive screenings, and early detection of any health issues. It also helps with time savings and often higher satisfaction levels with your care, end quote. Another important preventive health measure is scheduling annual vaccinations. Quote, currently, the one vaccine we recommend annually is the seasonal flu vaccine, usually at the start of the flu season, which is typically around September and lasts through March, end quote, Nguyen said. As we age, we also need regular preventative health screenings. Nguyen lists some of the most important ones. Women should get cervical cancer screening starting at age 21 and should discuss breast cancer screening starting at age 40. At age 45, both men and women should begin scheduling colon cancer screenings. After age 65, both men and women will be screened for osteoporosis and fall risk and begin having discussions about advanced care planning, which can include healthcare power of attorney, wills, and other important documents. Quote, there are other annual screenings and tests that may be recommended, but they depend on individual risk factors, such as if you have a chronic disease. At your annual checkup, ask your doctor which ones you should be scheduling, end quote, Nguyen said. New medication for type 2 diabetes. Dear Dr. Roach, please give me your opinion on the drug Rybelsus. It is advertised on TV as a wonder drug to reduce the A1C count for diabetics. My last A1C level was 6.8. My only problem with taking Rybelsus is that in the package insert or medication guide, it reads, quote, not recommended as the first choice of medicine for treating diabetes, end quote. Then it says in studies with rodents, it caused, not may cause, thyroid tumors, including thyroid cancer. But it is not known if Rybelsus will cause thyroid tumors or thyroid cancer in people. This makes me feel like I am a test animal to justify that it is okay for people to take Rybelsus. Why do you think the FDA would approve this questionable drug from a safe standpoint? Answer. Semaglutide, Rybelsus, Ozempic, and Wegovy is a newer medication for type 2 diabetes that is also being used as a weight loss medication. While it is not the best first choice for most people, the safety and efficacy data are promising. It is effective at lowering blood sugar and improves the risk of heart disease and overall mortality. So semaglutide and similar medicines are being more frequently used. Most people with type 2 diabetes and an A1C of 6.8% do not need additional medication. The issue with thyroid cancer is not clear, but large studies done so far with this class of drugs is in primate animals and in humans have shown no increase in the risk of thyroid cancer. People with a history of a particular type of thyroid cancer, medullary, or multiple endocrine neoplasia type 2 syndrome should not take this class of medicine. The FDA always tries to balance risks and benefits. New medicines that show promise are often approved on the condition that the risks are both communicated to patients, like the, quote, black box, end quote, warning you saw, and studied after the drug is marketed. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Grandma's Facebook posts strike a nerve after loss. Dear Abby, for Friday, January 27th. Dear Abby, my daughter passed away 9 years ago. She was almost 13. My mother never bothered to have a relationship with her when she was alive. But now, on every birthday and anniversary of her passing, Mom posts on Facebook how much she misses her and how close they were. Her friends all send messages of love addressed to Mom with no mention of my husband and me. It hurts and upsets us, but I don't know how or if I should talk with her about it. Any words of advice? Grieving mom in California. Dear grieving mom, please accept my deepest sympathy for the loss of your daughter. It is possible, now that she is gone, your mother realizes how many opportunities she missed to have a close relationship with her grandchild, and she posts those messages out of guilt. She may also do it for attention, which is sad. You can't stop her from posting what she wants on her page, but you can spare yourself the upset you experience when you see it if you stay away from Facebook on these occasions. Dear Abby, I am a closeted lesbian in my teens and really scared about coming out. I recently moved to an area of the country that is full of racists, sexists, and homophobes. Most of my friends are really religious. One of them has said bad things about gay people and what she would like to do to them. I'm scared to come out to them. I have only come out to a few people, but I know my family will accept me no matter what. I would really like to feel comfortable around my friends as my true self, but I'm not sure how I can do that. Yearning to be me in the South. Dear Yearning, because you are sure your parents will be supportive and accepting, come out to them. However, unless you consider coming out in your community to be safe, you shouldn't do it. You can find friends on the internet. Social media can provide friendships until you are old enough to leave the area you now live in. This is what many young LGBTQ people do. You have a wonderful life ahead of you, and you should come out when you feel the time is right. Dear Abby, how does one handle a visiting parent who is in the hospital for tests or a procedure when they have an attention-seeking person sitting with them the entire time? The patient is up for visitors and able to communicate, but this extra person, who is not who you have gone to see, monopolizes the entire visit. I offered to give the person a break so I could actually visit the patient, but the hint was ignored. Any suggestions? Dreading visitation in Ohio. Dear Dreading, I do have one. Before you visit, call the patient and ask if the visit is welcome and if there is a time when you can be alone. If the answer is no, wait until the patient is out of the hospital to have that visit. Between you and me, when someone is in the hospital, that person should rest rather than entertain anyone, with the exception of closest family members.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.